And the shoulder. Thank you very much. Now that you have the copy, we will comment on our members. I hope the members will have the copy sent to our members. Thank you. Comrade, He will be getting the greeting from the Minister of Health, who is Dr. Alfonso Chavala Gantuma, on the private health call. You recall that in our meeting at the committee last time, we requested that the Minister of Health should come and bring back about this. And I'm not sure if he knows the Honorable Minister. He said as well as the joint proposed to visit the one year.
the positive effects of precipitation at long distance and economic line. The public health system was under a lot of pressure, while the private health sector was accessible to only 20% of the population. Our policy intervention since 1994 has been focused on the provision of accessible, affordable, quality health care for all Salvadorians, and underlying all Salvadorians. One of our very early challenges was improving access to affordable medicine. We introduced a range of interventions to address these challenges. The interventions include, among others, the medicine policy, they include generic substitution, include expedited registration of essential medicine, include a single exit price of medicine, provision of parallel transportation, logistics fees, sampling fees, international benching, and expression on this through the distinct reference pricing and pharmacoeconomic. This policy has been held up as a huge and a gold standard for other developed nations. The medicine pricing regulations have been most successful in this regard. I can't tell you how to get this, you know, that this congratulating airline getting to the colleagues and say thank you very much, Minister, for having brought down the price of medicine, and in this regard, since the introduction of the regulation, which is not an exercise in itself, we have seen a decrease in excess of 20% in the reduction of medicine prices. This has resulted in a saving of over 2.3 billion rand in medicine. What is most encouraging is that the decline in medicine prices leads to a proportional increase in the utilization of medicine. But it was in the size of the importance of health promotion and prevention of disease and simply focus on the abilities of medicine. It is clear that medicine prices are the rich of most of us, and as the price climbs, more production than our. Our success in regulating medicine prices has affected much from a number of countries that like to achieve the TQF, WHO, and a project that we should consider writing a handbook on the effective regulation of medicine prices to the challenge in most developing countries. Last week we had a meeting of the African Union States, where actually we could get sharing our experience with Africa and actually measuring the possibility of Africa producing its own medicine. And I think this is the kind of important that we share with our rather than just within the continent, but also in other developing countries. While I've highlighted some of our success in creating greater access to affordable medicine, we also face significant challenges. The reduction in medicine prices did not result in more of a situation. This has been largely due to increases in travel of private hospitals, especially in the HIV administration. In 1999, we've seen significant increases in private hospital expenditure, especially since prior to 1999, the ownership of private hospitals was largely in the areas of independence, with no dominant market player. After 2014, consolidation of private hospital ownership with three large groups own over 80% of the private sales of the country, and one group is dominating each of the regions. this matter dominance together with the Competition Commission ruling against collective price negotiation, which is the bargaining power of the medical team. Consequently, the private hospital price increases around 2% inflation. In 1997, medical team pays 8.3% to beneficiaries for hospital expenses. In 2005, this increased to 2,320, where the beneficiary for hospital benefits. This clearly is an unsustainable situation that is leads to the demise of the sector, and actually the financial service sector is managing to conduct itself effectively. This might lead to the obliteration of the private sector in the country, because it is not going to be forced, because it is increasing prices of the service, two places not going to be able to afford it. So, having a further increase in cost of service. Especially the cost of also being increased in the very standard of the inflation. Especially derived a significant portion of the income from the state. It is not surprising, especially because it follows the economic trend of the cost. In 2005, the rate changes, the income has referenced a price list, which provides a transparent basis of the determination of the intent of using the first in the price of the the best way in NHR care to contribute to law of the country. We call the work of conference which highlights the increase in cost of medicine and the legal flooded concerns from the public because they want to have a house to make a home. I then in September convened the president, a health sector in Java, because my concern was the affordability and the high cost of the sector. This endeavor is one of three, as all was not aware of the pandemic. And the government indeed has taken regulatory measures to ensure that the sector was contained. A few months later, then we hear the private hospital group are raising their tariffs. We decide from January, in spite of the fact that we had all agreed in September that and the Ministry of Health in that case, in fact, has, using their word, had to regulate the private sector. And so we are in the process of finalizing the regulation of health outside the private sector so that we can together ensure that the private sector is in the country. But even more disturbing was the rate of increases. Despite the high cost of private health care and decreasing affordability of the membership, healthcare providers are seen continue to implement price increases that are not affordable for the future of the system. I think it is difficult to get all these negotiations at this time, they are not transparent. So one who does not know what the hospital group negotiating with it, so it's really something that needs to be regulated so that they are all clear of what they're negotiating about. And so I'm led to the private health hospital group and its vaccines to understand the reasons for their increases. It is clear from these meetings that none of them are prepared to accept the responsibility for the diagnosis. If that is blaming the other for the high cost. I will argue that the meeting that they cannot discuss the scale of their cost structure with their congestion charges present. One of the reasons for the high cost for providers, relates to the inability of the medical team, particularly smaller teams, to negotiate a reasonable tariff with large provider groups such as the private hospital. We are currently investigating a legislative regime that provides a fair basis for negotiations between the medical team and the provider. Have also been increasing their premiums and increasing benefit packages. So scheme members are not paying more for fewer benefits. Instead, they want to be even further. I understand that the listening are 2 weeks back in which they indeed are proposing that the benefits should increase. These benefit options are often presented in a confusing manner, and it is difficult for an ordinary South African to understand exactly what one is buying, including myself, and sometimes I don't know what I'm paying for. Our investigation suggests that the current administration for the medical industry are hard and must be achieved. It appears that the medical team has evolved. The administration, have profit making organizations and may not have interest in the medical team, which are organizations from many profit making. The medical team are not in the field, they also represent the parliament. The amendment bill strengthens the government structure of the medical scheme, thereby making the trustees and principal officers of the scheme more accountable for administrative costs within the scheme. The health care scheme has also been discussed in the challenges question, so concerned because it's still similar to the question. The healthcare that has failed has also been discussing the challenge of making healthcare more affordable. However, this discussion has taken much longer than we had anticipated, and no initiation was taken. I have to tell you that the current challenge is not the same. At that time, On the 11th of February, the Constitution Commission has set a case of collusion against Bank of England to protect healthcare, this man, which can, and Supernorm healthcare. For competition, Bank of England, this man, Supernorm, are competitors to apply for a product, but they have matters. Ted Abram, the owner of Bank of England, is also cited because it is alleged that certain of its directors were aware of the collusion and the fact that they had received the service. Thank you. Challenge for Ted Abram. Allison, the member statement of God. The Commission's investigation found that taxes were engaged in collusive tendering in market allocation, both of which are contravention of the Convention Act. The conduct was designed to avoid corruption in the firm and to manipulate the price of a market garden of the product. Concerning the tax of Africa, and has agreed to cooperate with the Commission's interpretation. So therefore, granted the unity of the Constitution to the Commission cooperate, leaning to policy. The Department of Health annually invites tenants for the supply of products, large volume, alimentarium, engagement solutions, administration sales, and the suffering. The Commission's investigation found that the reference to the and careful discussion then includes admission of that subject. This collaboration on the constant discussion that leads to crisis. This involves an explanation of crisis for the discussion of the product. To reach the tender, what's the challenge? To defend the greater mass of self who will win the tender and to be effect this agreement the terms of that discussion. We also agree that whenever tenders will not award the agreement or what they choose, giving them would be caution of the tender. Of the opposition partner, the Commission in investigation also found that the alleged conduct came to the attention of several board members of the Assembly, but no action taken. The Commission also found that ARCOP and Fraternia Party will engage in providing not just the supply of products and services, but the possibility that the group holdings, National Healthcare Holdings, UNICEF, Neptune Corporation, UNICEF, and hospitals, this involves them agreeing to provide products and solutions. The Commission has evidence that senior officers of each of the firms involved have missions and telephone conversations, reading of business, and allocation of money. The findings of the Commission render to the Competition Tribunal for a decision. I want to take the opportunity to congratulate the Commission on the good work that done in uncovering one of the contributing factors to higher prices in the market. This finding is important, and that is highlight one of the areas we must continue to work on. And so we will be reviewing the current process with National Treasury, so that it takes necessary measures to encourage
thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to congratulate the Minister for a very important initiative and important work that has been done, making healthcare affordable to the masses. Chair, I wish to ask a question with regard to page 3. The engagement that the Minister had with the private healthcare sector, hospitals in particular, they indicated that they would consider other proposals and report back to them. Now, is there any possibility in the price increases, from what I understand, have already been announced and probably implemented? Will that result, if it's a positive report back, in a reduction, a retrospective reduction of the price increases? Because I think this is very, very important.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to echo the same sentiment of Honorable Mandela by saying that this has been actually long been awaited by many, many South Africans in this country, particularly those that I will never say the masses. I will be very specific to say the poor actually wanted the government to intervene properly around this issue of escalation of prices on private hospitals or private healthcare and the like. My question will be related to paragraph 2 on the first page, because I believe and I hope that everything that the department is engaging on in relation to health issues must address some of the targets of the Millennium Development Goals and must address even some of the important indicators of the MDGs. Now, I just want to check as to whether, especially for the poor, that those interventions that the department and the minister has made so far will address some of the targets within the MDGs. Thank you.
Now, with regard to my engagement, I will not divulge this one as a fact against the suggestion for the suggestion. But I found that the fact has come down. The Russians have been through. The reason they are then at this point in time, I don't want to discuss it at all. That is what then goes back to the university. We must actually engage with it and find some kind of an initiative situation. Secondly, the immediate thing that we have done from our own, but I think the major one. Now, Honorable Matimena, you asked about Paragraph 2, whether these electors, the MDGs, the design of which making a person about 5 and 6. Yes, in our view, we have actually received the text of what we started doing as government. This is done. Medication and this is why we are fighting on this side to ensure the reduction of medication because people are injured. So they're not able to promote their own health issues, large acceptance of them on individuals, the large acceptance. And the reason that most of them are because they need to educate the people who are facing. And of course, then they get. So we change the indicators and the target that were able to participate right now, of what they achieved, is in part as a result of the things that we've done as a citizen in paragraph 2, as the French said, and in India, I would argue that all these things, including the ones that are exactly of free healthcare, indeed is moving at a lot of cost.
So we hand over to the owner of my question, I think. But what is the DNR in your mind? We have about 9 interventions to bring down the cost of the after the committee. All those interventions are completed. And we are supposed to, in a way, be attending as well to the question of the current medical team that in as part of addressing some of the problems. I keep seeing participating among each other. We are not yet addressing the access to affordable health of the people. What is it that we are not doing as a transformation of the people? Because once we have put all these interventions in paragraph 2, page 1, 9 of them, and then now we say there are other six cost drivers, especially in the private health sector, the hospital costs, the specialty charges, the medical things of the and we have to see things in some of the events to deal with these things. What is it that we are not doing that still results in this unfair condition in the consumer? I'm not getting any documented in this incentive. It's not some kind of information.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Madam, for the presentation. Chair, you hit the nail on the head when you just raised the question about the lack of the expansion of people on private medical aid, the access to it. When we had up the presentation last week about the medical aid scheme, they even mentioned only 7 million people now have access to the medical aid scheme. That's 1 in 6, it's basically 17% of the population. So it comes down further from 1994, at the 20% that was taken in the first paragraph. So I was just wondering, Minister, you rightly said prices of private medical aid, of private medical care is increasing way above inflation. And I agree with you, something has to be done. Obviously, you can't spiral out of control. But have you looked at the fact that the limited amount of private health institutions will naturally increase the cost because there's no competition? And you've stated on page 2 that, you know, three large groups own about 80% of the private sector in the country, and one group is dominant in a particular region. So there's no competition within that region. And therefore, you know, they can charge you what the right rate is. Because she told me once you have a private medical aid, private hospital or the necessary price. Have you looked at maybe liberalizing the market and allowing the building of more private hospitals and clinics around the country? And if you could just give us some idea, how many applications, where the officials might know, have you received over the last 5 years, all private hospitals and clinics to be built, and how many of you agreed to? Yeah, the other thing about the drive of costs, and you also mentioned that it's that of specialists and doctors and nurses, and that goes with care skills. You yourself said, I think in Mpumalanga last week or the week before, that Mpumalanga only has 700 state doctors to serve a population of 3.5 million, and they need 9,000 state doctors. A lack of 8,300 doctors in one province. So therefore, there's a huge demand for doctors, and also in the private sector, and they can charge what they like, basically, while it's such a valuable and scarce skill. And I was wondering, have you also looked into the possibility of the private sector coming on board and training doctors as well? Not in conflict with current universities that do it, but to complement them. I'm not talking about taking away the role of universities at all. Have you looked at that? Because, quite frankly, if we were to just trying to address the problem in Mpumalanga itself, it's going to take quite a few years. And I understand no one single magic bullet. It's going to take several strategies and a number of years to address the problem. But if you could just give us some indication of where you see the role of the public sector in this. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. I congratulate you for willing to come and speak with us. We share a common concern for our people with affordable medication. Let me start by saying that I come from the old regime. This homeland where the hospital is in the homeland. And I would like to know from the minister if the decision or effort whatever in trying to find out the reason why the private sector tried to increase price. Is it not because of the question of supply and demand? Because in my area, there are those who go to a clinic and then they get no medication. Even in the hospital, there are not enough staff. But if people are ill, they will be going to go into a private hospital. And then private hospitals are faced with a large number of patients. So in terms of supply and demand, they intend increased price. Is the minister not realizing that if in our own public hospitals you have enough field staff, we have in our clinics enough staff and medication in our shelves, then there won't be any reason for most of us to go to private hospital. So I can stop there. I thought we were talking to you. I'm convinced that they are actually increasing simply because of the question of supply and demand. Simply because they are taking advantage that our public hospitals or clinics and so on do not deliver the services that our own people need.
Thank you.
Some of them is really unbelievable. This is 13 years. So we have done as much as we can. Of course, I think the advantage here is because there is already a precedent, learning from the experience, we're not starting from scratch. I know I spoke to the Minister of Health of Germany, he said, you know, for us to be able to have universal coverage in terms of the health cost is total more than 124. So yes, it might seem that there are things that were not doing. Perhaps you need to put all of them into the post so that you can then understand which one has made a maximum impact. I just quoted the MPG. Because you can't reward this from bringing down the cost of medicine. The outcome thereof. What are these things that you are beginning to see in the country that indicate that, you are, of course, in the moving correct? But as I say, I can understand that there is impatience out there. Certainly, we have to do everything. But maybe also just to remind us again that even countries that thought they have got this life like the kingdom. They are facing problems. They are all misdirected. So you can't at one particular point in time and say, we've now covered everything, we've achieved, we've done everything else. I think in health planning, in delivery of health services, you learn as you go along and you adapt with the intention to improve the quality of health services and the provision of health services and the same of quality. Yes, I would say it wouldn't be correct to say we are not achieving. I think we've achieved quite a lot. It's just that, you know, sometimes when things are not put all together into one paper, to say this and that, unlike, you know, for example, in Polokwane, when President Thabo Mbeki gave his presidential report, and I myself said that I'm a member of cabinet, but once everything has been put together into one document, then you've got a sense of how much you've achieved and where everything needs to be done. Perhaps the exercise that you must do to do all these interventions and say, this one is a this is a MPG, this is what we've done in terms of hypertension and so on, so that we get a picture, hand-to-hand picture of the people of South Africa. Because I think that is the outcome that everyone wants to see. And a member of parliament, what has asked about the private medical experience, private hospitals and training of doctors and so on. May I just quickly say that I did not have to because of my lack of because you must understand the respect that was put on how many jokes have them. So heaven, the proposal to listen to my mother, I didn't help those people. I also read about them in the newspaper. They're not for me. But also in this regard, it can't be like there is no engagement between us and the private sector. I said in my input on the exercise that were engaged in the PTC, the health charter. And what the health charter seeks to do in the Navy is the sharing of the resources between the private and the health sector, private sector and the public health sector. And I think this is what the health charter seeks to do. If we have enough time, some of us can share with you what our experiences have been in creating private training institutions. But I don't think that's such a constructive thing. But there are areas where you really have to be vigilant if you must walk in that direction. But I think that you really have to be very vigilant about the aspects of the what's the thing? I could hardly find the consultant because the consultant was somewhere else there in the private health center. You might say perhaps it was good for me because then I had a lot of things in the but on a number of occasions I actually trembled when I had to do things that I knew I was quite satisfied. But because it was necessary to save life, I tried my best, and of course, not any patient. So it is all these things that you really have to plan for very carefully. You can't just stop and say, okay, today I'm going to allow the private sector to train medical students. Just try it in Tanzania, just try it in other countries. And I think we need to start those scenarios very carefully before we reach about the role of the private sector, I think even as I was talking about the private hospital group, I did say some of us get worried. What does that mean? Because they are moving in a direction that is going to obliterate them. If they have study and don't want to, so we say the role of the private sector. But it must be such that these activities are not a threat. These activities meet the same goals and objectives that we set for ourselves and society and our other generations. Health for all. Health for all. And I think it is in our document as well. And therefore, health for all might mean ensuring that it is accessible, affordable, it is of quality. And these are the things that both sectors should be aspiring for. I mean, in the right of me, I cannot understand the regulation. Don't overcome it. When I said it, and the private sector goes and overcharges it. And therefore, and then you turn around, you ask me, what is the role of the private sector? The role of the private sector in this particular instance is to make money and violate the regulations of the country. And I don't think we can accept that. And so we've got to get our act together, both the public health sector and the private health sector. The last question was, what is it about staff, is not enough, is it necessary? We had a meeting with the other day in the department and some other stakeholders. In certain instances, maybe but I think sometimes it is lack of knowledge as to where which medicine should be prescribed and administered. Because you can't administer all the medicine for primary care after treatment or paternal care. But there's training and shared medicine. So sometimes it is just to understand. Sometimes it is difficult and found that in the special medicine required, 86% of those are available in our clinic. But you see, we've got also, I think together with yourself, really try and correct some of the perceptions that are out there, which are not found. Really perceptions. With regard to the question of staff, I just like to say also, this is not a challenge that's clear on South Africa. It's a challenge, it's a global one, it's an international challenge. In the sense that if you look at the developed countries, they really, our assessment, did not have proper human so the training, because it depended on the developing countries, that was going to come about. So now they are facing the problem because the developing countries are making the most noise, safe, clean, don't disturb our healthcare services by coming from us, by saying, also don't give us donations besides the training with one hand on the other to take it to the state. So it's a bigger problem than just, you know, the microcosm that you see in South Africa. But also, obviously, developing countries have other challenges. And the challenges, of course, as we speak here, might focus on human resources health, but the social determinants of health, I think, also must be engaged in trying to address those. Because if, as a country, we're able to spend, as we are doing now, more on social services, then in a way we prevent disease. And therefore, in a way, we try to address these other challenges, which perhaps, as the Department of Health, are not able upfront to respond to. I think these are also critical, and therefore as members of Parliament, we must be able to think outside of health and say what are the other determinants of health for which we must motivate even budgets are being allocated to ensure that education gets money, health does, of course, infrastructure and so on. And I must say thanks to my organization because the health care is not because these things are absolutely critical for human development and for the economic growth generally. Just by way of and I will ask you to elaborate a bit on that. That on Saturday, there is a meeting in Kapan. As what should be done to address the issue of human resources in the area of health. And again, South Africa has been asked to leave and to provide, I think, what we meant to put in front of the future. On our experience, share with other countries, and share the issue of solidarity in the health. So what are the things that we can do to alleviate the burden of disease, not only for our own country, but also to see how we can intervene using our own resources in other countries, just like we signed an agreement in Namibia, where they want to establish their own kind of business and profit. Like the dance so it does mean that somehow we contribute to the resources of this department to make sure that that person reality because if you realize then less and less Namibians are going to come to South Africa with sometimes very minor cardiac operations. But these are the things that members of Parliament in my view should be thinking about but the issue of perception is really the very serious one. Maybe we should share with you the disturbing that we see and what we intend now and particularly the organization. I'm not saying that every time, all the time, everywhere you will get this. Sometimes it is just a message that they don't order on time. And it's not because the management is there. Maybe they are glad to know their mission of management, their mission safety. So it's a whole complex area that perhaps an assumption that can help us and get the advice from the members of parliament to how to respond to this challenge that we face on a daily basis as we implement the policy.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. If you allow me to start with one of the most question and comment at the same time. Just to say, for example, if we talk about the expansion of the people on medical aid stream, we have currently 123 or so medical schemes in the country anyway, and therefore you wouldn't actually talk about monopoly. That's what I'm coming to. I'm just saying, we're talking about private care and perhaps expansion of the market, but it does not necessarily follow that if you have the number, then you have competition that will actually then bring down the price. You currently have about 133 medical schemes here in the country. All they do is to rotate 7 million people among themselves. So in expanding that pool, even if it can be a number, so I'm also then coming to the hospital. We have these five or so big groups of hospitals. First, in relation to the question about how many applications have been agreed upon, we must say that the applications are actually done as provincial level. We do not approve or disapprove of any application at national level. But even if you went to the province, you will find that it's the presence of the same groupings anyway that are actually the number one. But number two, if you link this to the discussion about the collusion in the other presentation on 560, then it does not necessarily follow that because there will be more numbers, then you have actually the price coming down. This is related to a whole range of other business practices in South Africa that we would need to deal with if you're dealing with this issue. So it's not just liberalization. And in fact, I would add to that, on this side, there's a lot of liberalization with regards to the establishment of the provided unit certain criteria. The issue of the private sector training of health personnel is an issue that we are engaged with from time to time. We have, for example, a group of people that have been engaging with us on this question. There are quite a number of issues that would need to be taken into consideration. For example, there are certain aspects of the challenges that a healthcare worker would have to face and then know about that are not actually available in the context of the private sector. That's like the British and the German and most of the European countries, particularly in their military, even the US for that matter, sometimes do want to come to working situations here that will expose them to situations in their training that they'll face when they are deployed. Of course, in the case of the U.S. in preparation for things like Iraq, etc. So we tend not to agree with those. A similar kind of challenges we face in the South African context, in that some of the challenges that people have to face in training in order to be prepared for what is out there actually are not available in the private sector. So you wouldn't have a kind of situation where the private sector, if you had that, was just training outside the intervention of the public sector, hence the issue that the minister raised about the discussions on the health transfer. finally, Chair, on your question, I think I just want to emphasize on the minister alluded to the issue of cost of healthcare will actually be dealt with finally when we've dealt with two fundamental things. One is the introduction of the national health insurance that has been suggested by the minister, which would ensure that all South Africans have access to a basic package of services that is actually supported by health insurance in whatever sector they go to. That's the first thing, because as long as that doesn't happen, then the profit motive continues to actually, whatever you put in place, people will find another way to actually get around it, even though we try and regulate further than get around it, because there is a profit motive involved in it. So that's the one thing that would actually, so whatever else that people would then be substituting or adding to that would not necessarily interfere with the basic package of services. That would actually have to be accompanied by improvement in quality across the board. So in other words, that would actually enable people to have access to quality care wherever they go. And that would ensure, therefore, that you do not have a problem of this nature. So those two things are what we are pursuing ourselves. I mean, on the one hand, we are pursuing the issue of, you know, moving towards the national health insurance. On the other, we're pursuing the issue of improvement of the quality of care across the board. And once we've achieved those, in fact, as we achieve those, we'll see that this whole cost issue is not likely to run amok in relation to the public as such. So those two would be the ultimate objectives, let's say. While we are pursuing that, we have to actually take measures to save the private sector from itself, as the minister has said. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Okay, I was also looking at page 4 and the comment about current changes in the private sector based on the basis of intervention. Of course, while all efforts to increase access and affordability to healthcare are welcomed by the agency, especially the negotiations with the private sector, another question that comes to mind, and that would be, is government focusing primarily now on the private sector in terms of affordable healthcare, which, as we talk about, is only being 20% public being weak? It seems like an out of balance focus. And as has been mentioned, the demand for private care is mostly there because of the poor public health care, and it sort of seems that we're perhaps focusing at the wrong end, because obviously the demand's not there. And then, should we be looking at the challenges in the public health sector that are hampering delivery? I'm thinking of medical schemes, their willingness to assist with affordable health care. They've got an interest in the prices coming down. What about those kind of public-private partnerships? And I've heard some talk about medical schemes getting involved with putting money into public hospitals there, because that would bring the cost down for them in terms of the medical aid prices. So what I think we're really saying here is that apart from legislation, there are not any incentives for the affordable health care to entice more health care providers. You know, we said money, so obviously I'm looking at the left end as the sort of one avenue of money. And the other thing would be, is government looking closely, obviously that now that we're looking at possible legislation, are we also looking closely at the unintended consequences which might be the private sector shrink because of the legislation rather than the other way around, and what kind of comparative studies are we doing in that area? Because obviously, to me, this is critical that we don't have the unintended consequences. We all want to see the prices come down, but we certainly don't want to see the whole sector being reduced or leading the
prices.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question relates to the health charter. On page 4, it says that these discussions are taking much longer than anticipated with no indication of the outcome. Now, I think, Chairperson, you touched to the point that the challenge of mental health being more affordable is critical, and yet we have a task team that I don't know how long it's been in operation, and of course now there's no indication of the outcome. What is actually going to be done about this to expedite the matter? In the last page, on the last page, the concluding paragraph here says that the department is going to review the current tender processes with regard to the Scottish Police of Price Fixing. Now, my question is, are there loopholes in the current tender process which has actually encouraged or allowed the practice of collusive pricing, and has the Department of Health had an internal inquiry to determine whether loopholes exist and what's going to happen? Because my understanding is that from the minister that replied to my statement is that obviously the legislation, the competition legislation has got to be tightened. My third question, Chairperson, in a presentation last week, we heard that Pharma had objected and threatened litigation in terms of when the medical council wanted to regulate prices and accused the Department of Price Fixing. Would the minister like to comment on that? And in my last question, the minister said we're on track with regard to the Millennium Development Goals, but the APRM review stated that we are really not in support when it comes to the goals set for HIV and AIDS. I'd like a comment, please.
My question will be based on the fact that the private hospitals are aware of the fact that they are caught by doing the wrong and they do it. I just want to know when we're actually taking, because as long as we don't take any action about what is the legislation, we'll keep on doing this. And I think another question I'm going to do on medical team administration, it has been somehow answered. But what I'm concerned about is that there is law, there's legislation in change, but people keep on contradicting the law. When, who is going to be the first one to be taken to task to make sure that we are as government figure? Thank you.
My main worry is that while we are speaking about the legislation, my worry is that people are dying. What do we do? When do we go wrong? Because in the homeless system we used to get medication, the standard was high. Now people are no longer getting the same standard of medication. That's why they flock to everywhere looking for a better service delivery. I've written letters to the local hospital asking for a meeting with them so that I could understand their plan. Because things are not going well with it. So where do we go wrong? As we are doing this thing, what measures are we taking in order to see to it that people are getting it?
Thank you very much. Chairperson, my question will be related to page 4 of the presentation, paragraph 1 to 3, 4.
I just wanted to know, because I think those are the crucial questions, Honorable Minister. I just want to know as to whether the department has an oversight, a certain oversight role that the department plays on medical aid schemes. For instance, if you made mention of GEMS has been introduced 2 years ago, maybe if the department has got an information or it has got an oversight role upon the entire medical aid scheme, they can just share that with us. And lastly, I just want to know as to whether, because there are so many medical private hospital groups that have emerged, and seemingly those groups are the ones who are rigging prices and what is it. Do they have a certain relationship within or with some of these medical aid schemes and the like? Thank you.
What's regard to the oversight role with regards to medical aid scheme? There has been a statutory body that has been created called the Council for Medical Schemes, which was created through the and we have presented 2 years. So they have the oversight role. It's been done through an act of the department. The department has a representative sitting on the board, and the Council for Medical Schemes answers both to Parliament and to the Minister on a regular report according to the TFMA. The second part of your question relates to the whole question of private hospital groups and whether there's any relationship with schemes. That's not allowed according to the Competition Act, because it will be seen as vertical integration between providers and funders. So what the Competition Commission does, and we of course have a number of meetings with the Competition Commission, is to look at any such mergers that are going to take place. Recently there's been a merger called Julek and Bula deal with Messier, and the Competition Commission has ruled whether such arrangements can be done or not. So there was going to be a business deal with one of the administrators, and it was ruled that wasn't allowed. So there is very active oversight role from the Competition Commission, from the Council for Medical Schemes, and from the department. The health charter, yes, it's been a long process. It's very near finalization. There's just one or two items that need to be sorted out. Part of the reason is due to why we had to relook at some of the issues. There was a debate around whether the charter needs to be debated in MedLAC or not. The decision taken is that it now goes back to the task team so that the debate is within the task team. And there were certain principal issues that got reopened up for discussion. But we're hoping that with one or two more meetings that we will reach finalization, or if there are certain areas that we can't reach consensus, begin to try to facilitate that. And let me just answer the question of TPP.
Can I just add to assist the honourable members? The health charter is a negotiation forum. It's not the top team that we could easily say, give a deadline, finish your job. If the parties to the health charter include labor, business, in various formations, professional, etc., etc. And if those parties don't agree, like any other negotiations, they'll go on and on, and no one can actually stop them until the parties do agree. So just to ensure that we don't confuse that with the top team that could have been appointed by the minister and therefore report on the particular thing. And as Dr. Kofi has said, we are almost there.
In terms of the loopholes in the tender process, the tender process is a fairly rigorous process, and all parties have to basically indicate the price at which they're selling their product. And there is no loopholes as such in terms of it. However, if parties decide to collude outside of the tender process, that's something that's very difficult for us. Or treasury who actually run the process can control. So what we're going to have to do is implement a strategy such as them signing affidavits saying that they never spoke to the other party prior to the actual submission of the tender. They have no knowledge of the other party prior to this, etc. Which are extra measures that we're going to have. Additionally, we had previously negotiated tenders, for example, for the previous ARV tender was negotiated. And that is the one mechanism that one can use to actually prevent the issue of change later.
Yes, at the presentation last week, it was indicated that Pharma had taken the position when the medical team Council for Medical Schemes wanted to regulate the price or put a ceiling, I think, on the price policy. And they accused the Department of Price Fixing. So I want to comment on that.
The issue that Vetsama's been raising is that they have raised it before. It's with regard to the National Health Reference Price List. Now, when the department has taken over the National Health Reference Price List from the Council for Medical Schemes, SAMA did send out a lawyer's letter to say that we cannot publish it until such time that the regulations have been published. We have complied with all of that. But SAMA has been alleging that the National Health Reference Price List can be seen as a form of price fixing. This has been clarified with them. The National Health Reference Price List is a reference price. So it's not being put down to say this is the price that you will charge. It's a reference price to give guidance to both schemes and providers as to what should be the price. We have discussed it with the Competition Commission. Commissioner, it's not price fixing, but the Department of Health has got no vested interest in that. It becomes price fixing when associations themselves collude in order to set those prices. Okay, so for example, SAMA themselves previously used to, as a grouping, negotiate and set prices and deal with the funders. And that's what the Competition Commissioner has ruled against. Chair, we at numerous meetings we continuously raise it with them. Chair, what I'm saying is that in the various meetings we've raised this issue. And I think SAMA does persist in wanting to raise it again, even though the response has been given.
Honorable, that's
government focusing on the unthinkable that you have a government representing the interests, in particular of those who've been historically disadvantaged, and therefore not focused on their needs. This is just unthinkable. I think whatever we do, even as we interact with the private sector, it is because we want to address the historical legacy in the health sector in our country. So we do both. So we focus both on the private and the health sector, exercising the stewardship of the Minister of Health. I think that answers the question. I think when the Director General responded to the question of recruitment, which has been asked of us by the private sector itself, is that our primary objective is to save the private sector. So we do everything that there are no unforeseen consequences, unintended consequences of the recruitment, because you can interact with them. But the primary objective, we have a responsibility to save them from the threat of crime. I think so. The other question to Honorable Member Kalyan, why don't you wait for the August report? And then you can determine for yourself whether, in fact, we are meeting the NDG, we are responding to the requirements of UNGA. Then you will be satisfied and be very proud of your country, that this country is doing exceptionally well. I leave it at that because we don't have enough time to do so. We are on call. And I think we're the only country that has set some targets to make the ambition, but we're the only country that has ventured and has been bold enough to actually set targets. So we are on course. As soon as the report is released, you'll be very proud of being a South African, proud of South African. The other question that was asked, what was we on? I think it's the same question that you asked. But if people phrase this differently now, to add to the answer that I have given, let me say I really appreciate that you will be meeting with the officials and St. John Hospital with myself as to the department to ensure that that meeting does take place. And just report to the committee that over and above the hospital revitalization program that we are implementing, we have now decided to have an add-on, and this is what we call the hospital improvement plan, and we've chosen a few hospitals in each province in which we will demonstrate that things can be done and we see business unusual. The last question that was asked by Honorable Rashid for contravening of the laws and so on. Let me say in this regard, particularly what I refer to was the unapprenticeship. I think the private sector didn't think that we catch up with them. And once we caught up with them, we acted immediately and promised that we were going to prosecute them. The last group that has written to us to say it has now gone back to the provision of the regulations in terms of implementation and charging the correct price to the nature. But of course, they raise other questions which, in my view, are absolutely irrelevant. They have to implement the regulations. And hence, they should really be unless there's a certain level of advocacy.
Gracias.
peer to peer, as I'm sure we may in our mission, we seem to certainly appreciate that there are a number of measures, especially from the treasurer side, the competition commission, attempting to address this particular issue, as well as from the Department of Therapy, the number of concerns in that address.
The presentation that you was on dual therapy. Now it is important to understand that dual therapy is given in the context of prevention of transmission of HIV. Therefore, that's why the main document is titled Guidelines on the concept of that, because the guidelines are a whole source of the TOTCT, but I assume that the issue of therapy is part. Now, having said that, I think one must be the background to this, that there has been a program of TOTCT in the department that has been going on for since around the year 2000. And the history of that was that at that time, when the TMC session was started, there was one antiretroviral that was used to prevent the transmission. And the first monotherapy had only a number of individuals. Back from the beginning, it was because even at that time, there were already scientists that were saying that monotherapy may be good, but is not adequate, number one, to prevent a transmission. Number two, that monotherapy, particularly in a virus in itself, has a high resistance level. At that time, the science was telling us that prevention in terms of the virus was going to be at the level of about transmission would be at a level of about 6%. And then also tests that were being done like that were claiming that if we didn't use monotherapy but they used two or three drugs, then you could even reduce the frequency. But rather it was never quite conclusive because we never got the time to actually through all the trials, because that's when we were asking questions about whether we should be doing this monotherapy, because our issue at that time was, if it is true that malaria has a monotherapy, a high resistance level, why are we then going on to that? But I think in the midst of the world, the new drug is found and different. And the department then accepted conditionally monotherapy. Obviously, as things have progressed, that more times it comes up with it, there has been a shift towards dual therapy. Now, dual therapy in this context is actually just therapy and an addition of insertion. Obviously, it's a different regimen. Administration is different. The administration of the drug is different. Now, the TMTCD guidelines that you have in terms of transportation, quite particularly what needs to happen in implementing the whole program of change system. The key elements of the program actually are the actual enrollment of pregnant women. How do we enroll pregnant women in the program? What stage and how are they registered and how are they monitored and monitored? And then second most important element is the actual the new regime, the RDH. For both women and different dosages. And then because of that, also we have to consider in taking the decision in the context of HIV. And the fourth program, the fourth thing is actually we need to monitor, because this was actually never done. We need to remember that we never got to this stage where there was conclusive evidence of how many babies have been, because we then rushed and were pushed into adopting the regimen that was completed there before we actually got to the scientific evidence as well. Now we are, this time we see, we have an opportunity to actually interrogate exactly what goes on in the context of the dual therapy and look at what had happened when we were doing the monotherapy, when we implemented the monotherapy in the treatment. Now, basically, one would like to say that a fundamental difference now, the one input that is required in terms of implementing the dual therapy. If one considers that we've expanded and we set and give the first our target of access PLCCT in the Pacific regions of the country. In the light of new evidence, scientific evidence that is here, and what actually needs to be done, and of course, for our own interest in terms of studying the impact and the consequences of gene-edgeral therapy, we actually have to, in the new guidelines, have to look at three fundamental things. Firstly, one main thing about this, to implement this, and the guidelines say that, is that we will need to undertake training. And the reason it is required for professionals to take training is because there are some legal requirements in terms of pharmacy act, in terms of who can dispense what medicine. Now, it's going to be vital that we are susceptible not to break the law. So training of professionals in the implementation of gene-edgeral therapy is going to be critical. Now, the question maybe then would be which professional. Again, I refer to the pharmacy act, which is very specific around which professionals dispense which medicine after what particular training. And this, in terms of the whole program, is going to be the one fundamental additional step that we need to be taken. However, you're going to be the details of the guidelines itself, and also the dual therapy itself, if I talk to the dual therapy itself. Actually, it still encompasses the main element of voluntary counseling, testing, and etc. But the ARV interventions themselves are premised on the original principles of the CD4 count that are below 200 and above 200, 200 being the cutoff point for whatever reason you want to choose. For example, this is all those women with CD4 count that are low CD4 count, that is CD4 count that are below 200, are prioritized immediately as soon as that is prioritized onto the program. Anybody that is positive but the CD count of the 200. If I make an example of an HIV positive woman with CD4 count of about 200, will receive, and this is the standard, this is now the routine of the dual therapy, will receive AZT for 28 weeks of pregnancy and a single dose of nevirapine as well in the past at labor. And this is the basic fundamental part of where the dualism of therapy comes in. And the babies, infants that are born to these women will still receive a single dose of nevirapine and then 7 days of AZT. That in a nutshell is what the dual therapy is for. It's the addition of AZT to the nevirapine but changing the administration of the dose as to of the woman and the baby that is born. Now, this also progresses then after that first intervention with an ERC. The second intervention is actually on the baby. Women still are required to make a decision about whether they are, they can breastfeed exclusively or they can give a bottle feed, but it has to be exclusive. Mixed feeding, I think more and more the science has now put over the last 7 days that mixed feeding as much as possible should not be interfered in any way. But obviously, if you consider the circumstances of the average South African woman, the concept of AFA just means affordability, stability, acceptability, safety and sustainability. Now, the AFAS principle obviously addresses socioeconomic circumstances, addresses access to certain social amenities like fresh water, clean water, addresses also talks to answers to issues of culture and acceptability of non-breastfeeding, etc. So we do insist that a choice that a woman makes must meet the criteria of AFA. That it must be affordable if the woman chooses to buy infant formula. Affordability must be guaranteed, that it is feasible to for myself, so it is acceptable in the context of the community and the whole society of families, the safety and the infection and it can be sustained. It's because once it starts, it might establish solution for sustainability of the important. And obviously, after the initial intervention and the safety of the baby, the infant feeding, and the general care of the HIV condition, as per the original guidelines. One of the things that has to happen, that was done in the new guidelines, is that all infants that are born to HIV positive after the intervention, the majority of the baby will be tested for HIV. And we do have the IMCI, Integrated Management Services, that provides the rest of how the issue is solved. But just for the HIV, as much as that, I think it's sufficient to be sure that the baby is safe. Beyond that, I really don't have much to say that changes the picture from what has already been happening, except to reconcile the training aspect. That's one thing. People are mistaken, and two, that we are not in breach of the existing law. I think the only other thing that I would like to talk about very, very briefly is actually cost. It is not going to be cheap. Provide dual therapy for the client, the child, people who live with MAR. It is estimated that to implement the TMTCT program in the year 2007, which is going to end now, it's going to be about 282 million. And the estimate for year 2008 is 281 million. And escalation is quite dramatic, right up to year 2011, which should be about 339 million. So this is not going to be a huge problem. Really a huge chunk of one, the HIV and AIDS program itself, and in general the budget of the National Health Department. I think that's about as much as I can say. I have more to say. I have to document the presentation of all the necessary material, but I will try to highlight the important things involved in the story. Thank you.
Thank you.
don't know how many people have assumed where was the reference to the captain to the vision. And they had my own knowledge. Two had right of the knee, and they looked to the forward, and looked at the page,
Thank you very much, President. In Mrs. Mato's presentation, she made mention of three fundamentals, and one of those fundamentals is training of professionals. There is a network which is in place in that country, and there was a section in that Nursing Act, either Section 53 or 63 of that Nursing Act. Because right here, I'm getting much more worried, because one of the fundamental states, of the three fundamental states, training of professionals. And when you look into that section within the Nursing Act, it gave certain, it empowers actually professionals. For instance, in rural areas where there are no pharmacies or actually some sort of clinics which are highly advanced, so to say, in our rural areas. Now, if indeed we are still going to wait for the training of this professional in certain areas, like where I come from a rural area, it is called Mochabe in Northwest. In those rural areas where accessibilities and what if you a professional nurse in a clinic should consult via George Chapman Hospital to Rustenburg Provincial Hospital, I just want to know as to when and why. That is the implementation period that Honorable Waters is trying to raise. And the other thing, in any way, one who may be having an understanding like me would say, one needs to appreciate this dual therapy. But if I'm pregnant and again
it has been said like CD counts should be below CD4 counts of 200. I just want to check as to whether hasn't the department looked into that area critically, because we are trying to offer something which is totally different from maybe a normal person who is HIV positive and not pregnant in this case. I just want to check with those things as to whether the dual therapy, the application will be with, again, those principles of Chairperson, I don't know. The city council. This is technology. Anyway, now I just want to know as to whether we are going to consider those CD4 counts below 200, even in the case of dual therapy, and what are we saying about this training of professionals, though we are having a critical problem again of the professionals. Whom are we actually referring to right now? Thank you.
I'm going to request that the responses must be verified. We have to come back to this. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to find it. Let's take it back to another thing. Let's get another better, clear, succinct submission that we can understand and follow it. Where are we? Where is it taking us? That allow me to have a quick comment so that they can just take back with us. We have to quickly to the time now turn the national to the student in our program to come back. Thank you very much. Mr. Wilson, if you have any questions, thank you.
Yes, I'd like to comment before. This is a very heavy matter. So if you can allow them to comment, the cabinet is I take very seriously the fact that the student has come. Yes, it's nothing. Apologize. I was saying it's important to conceptualize this. So say the first country that posed the question about monotherapy was South Africa. Posed the question of administering the veratrin by the advocates of administering the veratrin when in their own country they were against administering the veratrin. I can tell you a short story, which is very telling. The Director General and myself go to the United States, and we ask this question after the big story which was then swept under the carpet about the data from Uganda. You know the story, I'm not going to repeat it. And at that time, we're now being forced to be the ones that analyze that data. I said, over my dead body, that's not our data, this is Ugandan data together with the United States. Let them give us the truth about the data. When we get to the States, we get to the NHI, and we are told, well, if you don't want to use the veratrin, other countries will use the veratrin. There will be mass mobilization in South Africa for the use of the veratrin. That is the answer we got. And true to their word, there was mass mobilization, which resulted in the pressure that were put on the department without substantive data for us to implement. Now we are being asked to implement your therapy.
who have you completed the exercise that you started? And I want this recorded. Because I can't understand how we can agree to plan in a vacuum and hope in this regard we are saving the lives of the people of our country. I think we just need to record this. Where we are, there has been interaction between ourselves and the researchers, backwards and forwards, asking questions, some of them beginning to change the policies in other areas that don't relate to the policies that we have. And so we ask in order to align our policies. We have now agreed, and this is why we have in front of you the document. Not with an easy exercise, it's sometimes easy when you are out there. And, you know, it's just a matter of reading a journal and the journal says therapy is okay, gel therapy is okay, but there are other issues that we have to take into consideration, which is exactly what this matter of session. So we have now, this is as far as implementation is concerned, we have now completed the policy because we did not have policy and we cannot develop guidelines and implement without a policy position. That's how you develop any implementation plan, policy, strategy, and so on and so on until we get to the implementation stage. So we have now completed that. The challenges are only going to surface and because it's a matter of Atlantic. So that's as far as we are. This coming Friday, the National Health Council is meeting to finalize the implementation plan. Now, the implementation plan, the constitution is ours. We also, this is a concurrent, whatever you call it, provinces implement and we make policies. So they have to say to us how ready are they. I can't force them. I can't go to Mpumalanga and say, thou shalt. Because Mpumalanga will say to me, yes. But I have the competency to do this and that given this constraint. So we are going to be agreeing. At one time when we contracted with the provinces, I won't name the province, and that was in December, and they thought maybe this thing was going to go pretty fast. They said, excuse us, we won't be able to implement until April. They said, no, we can't implement this until April, we don't have the capacity. So the issue of saying when will everybody go to any facility and find this really depends on us agreeing as a collective. So that when you move from one province to the other, you don't get to that province when you're supposed to be getting the agency for a particular period of time, you find that that facility does not offer. So there's not a force that has to be done. It's not the stroke of a pen, I stand up and I say, well, it's your therapy. Is not like that. So that's where we are, Chairperson. I thought I should explain this. Now, if we talk about the Western Cape, I don't know why we want to repeat this story because all of us know. All of us sitting around the table know that Western Cape just took its own route. It just made this country a federal state. And you can't, you know, you can't run a unitary healthcare system on a federal basis. It's just difficult to do that. So they did it. They may be having their own results, which the NHS shows. We have questions about those results. Because if somebody tells me, for example, that the infant mortality rate in the Western Cape is dropping because of PMTCT, then I say, excuse me, it means the Western Cape is not doing it well. All that it is doing is to check PMCCT, and it's not doing other things that must be saving the baby. So those statistics, for me, if certain members of parliament think they are hallelujah, glorious, and very good, for me, they pose certain questions. And I think, as a minister of health, I have a responsibility to ask this question. Equally so, you can't find just one doctor somewhere. There is no policy,
we have not agreed on a policy, just go and start doing things on his own tomorrow. One doctor will decide, okay, I will allow patients, you know, okay. So then it is okay, I believe in it, so it's all right, my patients will say, there's no policy in the country until a policy is in place so that we can run our affairs in an orderly manner. I think it is incorrect to do so. I think I should just answer those questions, but I do take it from Chairperson that we must then come back and please ask what they say and so on, and how we hope to address the issues that have been raised by Honorable Marshall.
I think that should be the format, Minister. I think some of the issues and the way we are relating to here in the narrative, I would have thought we should have the format of the transmission. When we have the policy issue there, and the guidelines, and the communication can be used, etc. The take back, can I request the Honorable Judge that you put my three questions now? We'll have another opportunity. Thank you very much, Honorable. Want to come in, I'm not going to ask a word. You are going to say something, you will come back again necessarily.
I'm just checking on time frame so that we can prepare ourselves. Chair, but also to clarify, I think what we would want to see is a presentation on the PMCCT program as well as the implementation plan, or specifically on Shual Therapy, because I think you must be clear about what you are expecting of the department. We assumed that this was actually about the PMCCT. Let's have that aspect of the implementation. But let's clarify that. And perhaps we'll talk about time for you.
No, I'm sure we'll indirectly be able to talk about the I would have thought the DMT is the work therapy is a component of the thank you very much. How is your thought is bad, but I'm saying that you are tempted to do that, I think, but you give me a thought. It's there, but it's not there. And then you're putting it so tight, and,
present that one confused and not yourself.
Thank you very much. All what I'm saying, then. So that we can be able to answer some of the questions that have been asked and also to understand progress, process, strategies, and also some information that may be there or may not be there, or misrepresentation of affairs that may be there, not there, etc. Within the aftermath of the conversation, but I really want to question another question. Now, the minister will already be here.
Thank you very much.